thank you for joining us for this edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. Bayer Advanced Lawn and Garden expert Lance Walheim joins us today. He's a horticulturalist and a rose gardener. He's with us to talk about fall rose care. Lance is also the author of the best-selling book, Roses for Dummies. It's an episode you don't want to miss. Stay with us. The Rose Chat Podcast starts now.
It's time for the Rose Chat Podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating the world's most beloved flower, the rose. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleef and Teresa Byington as they chat with rose lovers and experts from around the globe. With each episode, you'll gain valuable knowledge and insights to achieve the rose garden you've always dreamed of. Listen now as we explore the world of roses.
Hey, Lance, welcome to Rose Chat.
Hey, great to be here.
We're so glad to have you. Now, whether I want to admit it or not, fall is just around the corner, so let's get started tonight with your tips for fall rose care.
Well, you know, it's a very, very important part of the year for roses because whatever you do now, and talking about late summer, the earliest part of fall, is really going to influence what your roses do for the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. And of course, it depends on where you live. You know, like we say, all gardening is local. And if you live in the deep south or you live in the north, what you're going to be doing is going to be a little bit different. But if you're in a mild climate like I am, you know, this is an important time of year to make sure your roses are really getting ready for what is going to be one of the best blooms of the year. In other words, people think of roses as, oh, they're great spring bloom. But if you're a rose grower, you know that the fall bloom is just as good, if not better. So things that you do right now will really help that bloom.
Now, here, we don't do any fertilizing or anything after August. I'm in zone 5B.
Right.
So what are you said you were in a milder climate. So what are you going to be doing in your climate?
Well, in our climate, we are going to be fertilizing because that fertilizer that we put down this month, I mean, we like to make sure to get it on in August as well. But if you can really push that growth late in the summer, that's really going to improve your bloom in the fall. So we are definitely fertilizing. If you haven't done any deadheading, it's time to make sure that you do that. And of course, you want to take a look at any pest problems that you have, because if you can, anything you can do in the fall to control those is going to give you a better situation in the spring.
You mentioned pests. Let's talk about some of the pests that you've been seeing this year in the garden. Anything that you're hearing about from those who contact you that they're having particular problems with this year?
Well, you know, we have just had a recent finding of chili thrips here, and I know that that's a problem in much of the southern United States, so that's a big issue. I know we don't have it here where I am in California, but the rose rosette is another problem that people are having. And then, of course, there's the standard problems that people have in warmer climates. We can still have problems with mites. You may see some aphids, but as the weather gets colder, we'll also see some diseases, or cooler anyway, the nights get cooler, we'll all see some diseases like powdery mildew. So you really got to kind of keep an eye out and inspect your roses often and make sure that you're ahead of any problems that you know might be coming.
You mentioned rose rosette. What are you hearing the latest findings on?
Well, unfortunately, it's not very good. I mean, there is very little control measures, and usually the best recommendation is that you take the rose out. You know, it's spread by an insect, a type of mite that most insecticides don't control. So if you start seeing that wild growth that's all distorted and different colors, your best bet is really to take those roses out as soon as you can.
That's what we hear, that you dig it up as quickly as you can, you bag it, you get rid of it, don't put it on your compost, just completely eradicate it from your garden as quickly as possible.
That's right. Otherwise, those mites are going to spread it around. I've seen some horrible things, unfortunately. You know, we were down in the south, and we were working in a city that had been hit by a tornado, and they had re-landscaped the whole city, and they'd used a lot of the knockout roses. It was Coleman, Alabama that I'm talking about, and unfortunately, the rose rosette came through there and just wiped out thousands of the knockout roses. So unfortunately, one of the most popular roses now is also one of the most susceptible, not only to, you know, rose rosette, but also to the chili thrip.
Why do you think that you said knockouts were somewhat more susceptible? Do you think that's just by the sheer volume the number of knockouts that are available, it hits those because they're mass planted, or?
Yeah, I think that's got to be part of it. You know, whenever we look at trees or any plant that gets real popular and gets planted a little bit too much, when something hits it hard, like an insect or diseases, it tends to move through it quickly. But I also think that there's something in the heritage of the knockouts and some of the other roses that make it particularly attractive.
That's interesting.
Unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, since the knockout rose has really taken the rose world by storm, we're looking for those next big things. So what do you see on the horizon of the rose world? What's coming next?
You know, I am all at this time of year, it's a great time to get out there and start looking at those catalogs. And I have been looking at them. I've been at a couple of the fall garden shows and, you know, seeing what the wholesalers are growing, which are going to show up in the nurseries. And there's some fun things coming up there. So that I'm looking for, you know, if you're familiar with the home run roses, which from Weeks Roses, that original home run with the big, beautiful single red flowers, well, they've got a watercolors home run now, which is a yellow, gold, and pink, which I think is going to be worth a try, especially if you're in areas that are really, you know, feeling high disease pressure. They've also got one called Smoking Hot, which is a hybrid tea. I don't know if you know if you've grown hot cocoa. It's a little different color. It's kind of a burnt orange color. And at first I thought I'm never going to like that. But what I found, it's one of the best cut flowers if you combine it with red roses or yellow roses. I love hot cocoa with Julia Child, for instance. Just makes a fantastic bouquet. So Weeks has got one called Smoking Hot. It's a hybrid tea. I'm looking forward to seeing that. They've also got Happy Trails, which is a ground cover. David Austin's got some new roses also. They've got the first of their yellow roses, which is called Poet's Wife. Excuse me. So that's another one I'm looking. They haven't had a lot of yellow roses. And looking at the David Austin, the new varieties they're bringing in, they're more restrained, smaller growing, which I think is really for people who live in mild climates. Early on with some of the David Austin roses, they were so vigorous. They would be 10 feet high if you lived by the end of the year, if you lived in a mild climate.
My hand's raised. I have Benjamin Britons that are 14 feet tall.
I know. And thorny. They can be pretty rough. And in California, that's exactly what happens. You know, Star Roses has got White Drift Rose, which is the ground cover roses, which are so popular. That's great, to fun to look at. Jackson and Perk has got some Veranda Roses, which are Floribunda. And, you know, Floribundas, I just love them for landscape roses. One of my favorite roses, of course, is Iceberg. And I always love the Floribundas. We get so, you know, we've concentrated so much on the knockouts, we forget just how many great roses there are out there. And if you look at the Floribundas and the shrubs, you really get some great opportunities. And then also the Oh So Easy Double Red is one that's brand new from Proven Winters.
And I haven't seen it.
Yeah, and then I know that all Southerners are looking forward to Miranda Lambert, which is the new rose that you know, hot, fragrant, and I guess that a lot of the profits are going to go to what's it called? Mutt Nation Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always good. So you can get a rose and you can give some money to help some pets. So there you go.
I'm trying a new one this year called Ice Cap, and boy, is it putting on a show right now. It has been beautiful all summer, and it's still just gorgeous, filled with bloom. I'm very happy with that one. What about fragrance in roses? Are you seeing any, smelling any good fragrance in the roses that are coming out?
Well, you know, I haven't tried them all, but I mean, fragrance is really coming back. And that's what, you know, a lot of the, even in the Floribunda, some of those Jackson and Perkins roses that I mentioned, also have good fragrance. And I know that the, Miranda Lambert has great fragrance as well. So fragrance, you know, you can't beat it. When I always tell the story, what, for one time for Valentine's Day, I picked 7 roses at that time that had received the James Alexander Gamble Award for Fragrance. And I planted a little garden, you know, it was Peace and Mr. Lincoln, Chrysler Imperial, Double Delight, things like that, and planted them in a little circular garden for my wife so that when she came home from work, she could go out to the garden and de-stress and smell the fragrant roses. So, you know, that's why it's so great if you're thinking about buying roses this year, go to a local rose garden, smell how those roses smell in your own garden, in your own area.
Oh, so important. I now have a little grandson, and when I'm walking with him in the rose garden, I want to take him to the ones that are fragrant, because I think so much of our memory, it's tied up in the things that we experience with all of our senses. And so I want him to have a great feeling about the memories that he has in my garden. So I always take him around to those that are most fragrant so he can enjoy them and remember them. So it is really important.
I did that when I was young also, and the amazing thing is that all the different fragrances that are out there, the different types of rose fragrance, it's just, you know, from the lemony fragrance to the real musky hybrid teas, it's remarkable.
It is. In my family, we didn't grow roses when I was small, but we did grow irises, and to this day, when I sit down to deadhead some of the iris leaves, all of a sudden I'm 8 again. So it really is so much a part of the experience and our memories to have those wonderful fragrance. So I'm always glad to hear that we have disease resistance, but I want disease resistance with fragrance. So there, in a perfect world, all of our roses are going to be perfectly fragrant.
Right. You know, going back to some of the things about the fall, we talked about proper pest control, and Bayer Advance can certainly help you with that with products you can learn about at BayerAdvance.com. You don't want to forget to water as the weather, you know, as the days get shorter. We could still have hot spells. You want to make sure the roses are nice and wet going into the cooler weather. You know, applying a great mulch is also a great way to go. So those are things that you can do to really make sure your roses get ready for the winter.
Yeah.
Lance, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask, which mulch do you prefer? You know, there's a big debate here in the Deep South about pine straw mulch versus, you know, the pine bark nuggets or even a different type of mulch. Some people are using cocoa shell mulch.
Right. I have seen some of that. You know, my idea for mulch is use whatever you've got. There's so many different opportunities. Personally, you know, we have great recycling programs here where you can, you know, contact your local refuge company, and they're recycling stuff, so you can actually, it's things I probably wouldn't use in my vegetable garden, but it works great on lawns. So I'm all for recycling whatever you got. When I get my trees pruned and they chip them up and I leave them in the pile out in the front yard, those go all over my roses. But you know, you do have to be careful. You know, you have to understand that mulches do have different characteristics, and they can eat up nitrogen, so that's another good reason why you want to make sure that you're fertilizing on a regular basis.
Sometimes people don't realize the true benefits of a good mulch around your roses.
That's right. Well, you know, I'm in California and we're in the middle of a serious drought. I'm in Central California, actually, and I'm in which is the area that has the worst drought. And mulching is one of the most important things that you can do. You know, it cools the soil, it reduces evaporation, it reduces weeds that compete with the roses, and any weeds that you might get are going to be easy to pull out. And sometimes people don't remember how important it is to refresh that mulch. You know, you're putting fertilizer on, you're watering on a regular basis. Organic mulches break down quickly, so it's important that you get out there and refresh them whenever you can.
Would you recommend, if you're going to start a new rose bed, would you recommend getting the bed ready in the fall for a spring planting, or waiting until spring to get ready?
I'd go ahead and do it now. If you know where it's going to be, this is a great time to work in organic matter. If you're doing some serious landscaping and roses are going to be part of that, then you may want to have a soil test done at this time of the year. Mm-hmm. That way you can do anything this time of year to adjust soil pHs if you need to, or anything like that. So I'm a big fan of doing it in the fall, and then having the rose beds, the organic matter will be partially broke down, and then you can add more organic matter before you plant. But I'm a big fan of doing it in the fall.
And then you have all the big work done. You can just plant your plants and start enjoying them. So a big plus there.
Lance, I wanted to ask you about a more organic approach to rose gardening. I know Bayer Advanced has come a long way in their product line. And I know you're probably familiar with some of the more earth-friendly products that they have out. Can you tell our listeners just a little bit about them?
That's right. Yeah, we have Bayer Advanced has the Natria product line, which is our non-synthetic line of pest control products. And we've got a lot of great products. For instance, when it comes to rose growers, one of the things that we have disease control, which is an organic, and some of these can be used by organic gardeners. You can look for the label. And the one that I like the best is disease control, which is a form of Bacillus subtilis, which is, you know, if you're familiar with a BT, which is used to control different types of butterfly or moth larvae. This is a bacteria that fights off rose diseases like black spot, like powdery mildew. So that's one of the ones I really like. We've also got various forms. We got neem oil, which is also a great one for roses because you not only get insect control, but you get disease control. And the important thing to know about, you know, being an organic gardener and using these is that, you know, I like to say it's kind of a good news, bad news story. In other words, the good news is it doesn't last very long in the environment. The bad news is it doesn't last very long in the environment. So you basically have to use these products more often. And it's also important to get an early start. So if you want to be a successful organic gardener, you've got to get out in the garden, be a good observer, make sure you get ahead of the diseases, because once the diseases or the insects get a handle, they're harder to control. So it's very important these products have to be used more frequently to be successful, and they have to get on early.
That is so true. Now, unlike you out in California that doesn't have to deal with a difficult cold winter, what are some tips that you would give to our growers who are in the cold regions of our country?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, it's like you had said earlier, you know, it's time to stop fertilizing. You don't want to push any type of growth that's going to make the tree or make the roses more susceptible to cold damage. Other things I like to do is, you know, this time of year, as we get farther along, you might want to stop deadheading. In other words, when the roses put the energy into developing the hips, they put less energy into flowering or other types of growth, so it can kind of harden them off, I think. I really believe that. Plus, the hips are beautiful. And then as we get to that point where, you know, we've started to get some low 20 degree temperatures, you've had a hard frost, you know, that's when you might want to start thinking about protecting the roses, the ones that aren't as hardy as the other, the hybrid Ds, the grandifloras. And you mound some, you know, if you can mound a foot and a half of soil over the crown of the plant, that's really the easiest way to protect it. A lot of people will use different types of cages and kind of enclose the plant and then put a mulch like hay or whatever they have around, any type of organic matter for further protection. And then, you know, also so that they're easier to protect, you might want to do some light pruning then. And then you'll be able to get that protection around them better. So you got a lot of work to do. In California, we don't have to do that, and I'm glad.
Do you have a dormant season where you live?
Yeah, we do have a dormant season. We get here, I live on a citrus ranch, and we regularly get down to about 25 degrees, which I know is not much for you guys, but, you know, if we get a cold frost, it'll knock the leaves off. But a lot of the times the roses will stay partially, not completely dormant, but they will grow. I mean, it's not uncommon for us to have blooms on our roses all the way into December in Southern California. So that just goes to show you. So we kind of got to force the dormancy sometimes, because you really want them to take a rest, and you also want to, you know, do the type of pruning that's going to rejuvenate them and also get some of the disease and the dead wood out of the roses.
Now, you mentioned forcing dormancy. Tell our listeners what you would do to force dormancy.
Well, you first of all, you know, you want to give them the regular hard pruning. And I know a lot of people who will go to the lengths of even, you know, pulling all the leaves off the plants to, you know, just slow their growth completely. And the reason is also you get you remove a lot of the inoculum for diseases in the following spring. So that's primarily what we mean, is pruning and removing the leaves if you have to. I mean, for somebody like me who's got a lot of roses in their garden, I'm not going to go out there and remove every leaf from the roses, but I know a lot of people that do. We have, you know, we have only a couple months of downtime.
So how many roses are you growing at this time?
That's a good question. I have a test plot out on the side yard, probably has 20 or 30 roses. And then I use roses in the landscape everywhere. Like I had mentioned, I probably have 50 iceberg roses in my yard and other roses that I like to landscape with. To me, the white roses, the iceberg just makes everything else in the garden look better. So I'm sure that I've got over 100 roses. I'm one of those guys where, especially when the drought situation is the way it is, particularly in my test garden, I kind of run it like a football team. If you can't make the team, you're out of there. I do some shovel pruning and we'll try something else next year.
We're pretty brutal too. My frequent trips to California, since I have family there, there are iceberg roses everywhere. They're absolutely outstanding. Now, they don't do as well for me here in the Midwest, but California is just filled with beautiful icebergs.
You know, we're blessed with the great rose climate. There's no doubt about that. You know, we don't get the humidity. We don't get the summer rainfall. We don't have, you know, we don't have things like black spot ear. And that all makes a huge difference. So sometimes I kind of catch myself and pull myself back and say, you know, you live in California. That's, it's a special climate when it comes to roses.
It's what we dream of.
Well, have you been out to Wasco where they grow all the roses? Wasco is a town in the Central Valley where I am that's about 30, 40 miles south of here where all the growing grounds are. About, I don't know what the latest numbers, but it's probably around 75% of the roses are grown there. And it's because the climate is so perfect, but it's also because we get winter fog here. And when they dig the roses, it's very cool and it's very moist. So it's the ideal to produce bare root roses.
Wonderful. I'm going to have to be looking for that next time I'm out.
If you're ever in the Central Valley of California, in San Joaquin Valley, in the fall particularly, when they're really blooming, it's worth driving through the fields because there are literally hundreds of acres of roses.
Well, it's been great to have you. We're coming to the end of our broadcast, but you've given us so many great tips and so many good ideas for next spring. So, Lance, it's been our pleasure to have you this evening.
No, it's been great. Let's do it again sometime.
You've been listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington, expert rose gardeners who want to help you achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Don't miss an episode. Listen anytime on our website at rosechatpodcast.com or listen on the go via the Rose Chat app on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Share this podcast with your social networks and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using the hashtag RoseChat. Join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. The Rose Chat Podcast is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.